This is another episode of Connecting the Dots podcast. I'm Skip Stewart, Vice President and Chief Improvement Officer at Baptist Memorial Healthcare.
Hey, everybody. I'm H.F. Mason. I'm a general surgeon and Chief Medical Officer at Baptist Memorial Hospital DeSoto and Chief Quality Officer for the Baptist System.
And hi, everyone. I'm Jake Lancaster. I'm an internal medicine physician and the Chief Medical Information Officer for the Baptist System.
Well, today I'm so delighted to bring back another guest that we've had in the past, but also a dear friend, and many of our listeners are going to be familiar with him, and his name is Billy Ray Taylor. Billy Ray is out there doing a lot of amazing work. He's the CEO of a company called LinkedXL. Many of you probably know that he was a high-level executive for many decades at Goodyear. He wrote a best-selling book called The Winning Link. But briefly, Billy, if you would, tell our listeners a little bit about you and about your background.
Well, like you said, Skip, but first of all, thanks for having me here. I spent 30 years with the Goodyear Tire and Rubber Company. So I started on the shop floor, kind of like once I graduated from college with an electrical engineering degree. What surprises everyone, I went right to third shift as a shop floor area manager. Yeah, so I was a supervisor on third shift. I spent 6 years there. And worked my way up to corporate America from that bottom level, bottom tier leadership. And so I learned a lot there around really operational excellence firsthand, really from first failures. And so walked around there and from that was leading North America, commercial, off-highway, aviation. And after 30 years, I decided one morning, it was Saturday morning, my wife and I were talking. I said, it's been a good 30 years. It's time to go. And so from that, she says, first of all, I think she looked at me like I needed to be drug tested. Something wasn't right. And so at that point, I actually walked in that morning and that Monday morning and officially retired and then started the company LinkedXL. And what we do is we architect operating systems. So we are an operating system architect firm. We take the elements from operational excellence from the Toyota way and other ways and basically look at your culture and start to architect a system that fits you, that right, it continues to evolve. And so we do that. And then we're a tech entrepreneur company where we have a software now that does strategy deployment. So we did all of that, all those learnings came back into LinkedXL. So that's what we do now. That's what I do now.
Well, Billy, once again, thank you for being on the podcast. Unfortunately, I was not, when you were on about a year ago, I was not on able to make that podcast. So it's really good to meet you. And I've heard, you know, heard great things about you from Skip. The theme of today's podcast is going to be start where you are. But before we get into that, I just want to get your take on it. You know, your experience starting as a supervisor on third shift and working your way up into the corporate and maybe even the C-suite. Tell me, how important was you understanding and that work that you did on the front lines? How did that help you be a better leader when you made it up to corporate?
Well, really, when I started to go up to corporate, the point of impact. So where I was starting at was the point of impact. That's where strategies come to life. And so when leaders don't get that strategy down to that level and those people don't know, you have a serious problem because you can't manage a secret. And so that strategy is a secret when you get to that shop floor. And so that level of engagement, that level of influence, it was critical. And so when I look back and I reflect, when I was a floor level supervisor and I thought about the executives that I was reporting to, the great ones are the good ones and the ones that struggled. The ones that were very effective, they embraced that point of impact. Right? Because you think about this. And when you look at what the podcast we're going to talk about today, you can't outsource execution. You can't outsource commitment. You can't outsource accountability. And so at that level, it's critical because that's where the strategy comes to life, not in the office, because the people in the offices should be working on the business. supporting those people on that third shift that are working in the business. And so that's why it's so critically important.
Yeah, I agree with that. But let's jump into the topic. So start where you are. What do you mean by that?
I mean, it's the starting point. I can't wake up tomorrow and say, I want to go run the Boston Marathon. Doesn't work that way. It just does not work that way. Oh, I have a standing joke. I tell a lot of my friends, I says, I would have played for the Dallas Cowboys. They just didn't want me. At that point, you've got to start to that point where knowing what your capability and your capacities are, and then you grow from there. You improve your capacity, your capabilities. In most cases, it improves your capacity, but you have to embrace your current state, your current reality, and then you have to have that vision of where you want to go, but it's more important to know where you are on that journey. It's your starting point. And then you can work on the gaps. Because often I went to the worst plants in Goodyear. I was the person they'd handpicked to go to these plants. And I'd walk in with the big book, right? The Toyota way, right? The goal. I had all these big aspirations, but I had to start where I was at that point. And so that's why it's important to start where you are.
Right? You know, that resonates with our Baptist Management System that Skip helped develop, and our improvement work is we do a lot of kata work, and yes. You know, the with kata, you have to, you know, of course you set your target condition, but you have to understand where you are currently. And there's a tremendous amount of time that is spent or should be spent on determining your current condition. But when you say start where you are, a lot of times people just, and this might not be a good way to put it, they feel a little bit helpless. And they, you know, they just don't know, or they say, well, we're so bad, or we're so far behind, we can't do it. How would you answer those people?
So, first, understand when people as human beings, what I've realized is we don't really resist change. We resist change being done to us. We don't resist it done with us. And so often, in most cases, even when I go into organizations that I'm working with, I'm met with the stone face. I'm met with, what are you going to teach us? And you know what? I start with saying, no, this isn't something new. Right? What's new is why we're doing it and how do we get everyone on board? And so I start with the why. I always start with the why before I get into the what and how. And so building that case for change, it gives hope. And again, confidence is built in small accomplishments. And when people start, I start to approach with small so that we can get some wins, so we can get some buy-in. And so I don't bring in this big finish line approach, you know, hey, welcome team, and we're going to win the national championship. Well, I'm a first year coach and I like sports analogies, but you know, the famous Nick Saban, right? We're going to beat Alabama. Yeah, we're going to beat Alabama this year. Wait a minute, coach. Right? Versus we won 4 games last year. Let's go to 10. That's a goal. If we win 10, we may get into a bowl. We may get into a major bowl. Those things, when I lay it out like that, then I get into, here's how we're going to do it. Here are the standards we're going to follow. And then at that point, I'm hard on the process and leading easy on the people. Mm-hmm. And so when I put those standards in there, and leaders, what I often see when leaders put these big lofty goals out there and those big initiatives, they're hiding something. They're hiding their lack of knowledge. They're hiding their lack of commitment. They're hiding, and it's not, sometimes it's not intentional, but it in some cases, I call it airport lean. They went to the airport, saw a book, read it. By the time the plane landed, they thought they were a lean expert, right? That's airport lean. And it's, we're going to hire Six Sigma black belts, and we're going to do this. And these things are, it's tool based.
Yeah.
And versus awareness of what you need, awareness of what capabilities you have as a team. And so that's important.
Well, I guess I need to remove lean expert from my LinkedIn profile, since, you know, reading that book didn't get me the credential. But taking us back to start where you are, I like how you said, you know, understand your current capabilities and grow from there. I was also thinking of it as change the things that you are capable of changing. So sometimes I see teams or groups say, oh, we'd only be able to improve if only IT would do X, Y, and Z, or if we could get this group on the other side of the organization to help us do X, Y, and Z, as opposed to looking internally and seeing what can they control that they can help move forward, instead of always looking to somebody else to, as you know, blaming the other part of your team for why you're not improving.
So, Dr. Lankes, what I would say with that one is not only what you can control, but leaders must be deliberate on what you own. What you own in the strategy. Because think about in rooms that I'm in, accountability sometimes is a bad word. Mm-hmm. And I'll say, Dr. Lankes, this is what you're accountable for. You clench up. But I say, Dr. Lancaster, this is what you own. And I'm counting on you to drive results on this spot what you own and control. And then what I'm very deliberate on that visualization of what you own, that visualization and enabling you. Because the number one question I have when I'm leading people, even with my children, I ask, what do you need from me? So once you know what you own, I'm going to ask you, what do you need from me to deliver that? Not what do you want from me, right? I want a steak. I need to eat. They're two different things. And so when I break that down, what do you need from me? As human beings, again, we bow up. And then we don't take the helpless route. If I ask you right now, what do you need from me to pull a podcast off? Nothing. I just need you to show up. We've got right. And so it's a different mindset, because mindset is really important when you're driving change. Titles don't drive changes. Titles get the people in the room to listen to you. But when it comes to execution, and you said it, and blame. In the absence of ownership comes blame. When people and teams don't know what they own and leaders are not deliberate about that, they blame. Instead of controlling the outcome and driving the outcome, they blame you when the outcome doesn't meet expectations.
You mentioned something earlier that really struck a chord with me, and you said that people don't like, how did you put it, don't like change
done to them,
but they will accept change that they're a part of or that they're done with. And that got me thinking, you know, about strategy versus tactics and what, you know, an organization that's trying to develop strategic plans and develop those tactics to implement those plans. How important is it to engage those frontline workers to develop those tactics?
Critical. It's critical, right? They have a voice. And so when you're developing plans, when you come tell me, here's the plan, execute it, you're not going to get me involved. But if I'm in the room and I have a voice, and I don't necessarily have to have my fingerprint all over the plan, but I need to be engaged in the plan. I need to have a voice in the plan. And now it's our plan versus your plan. And I just want to share a story. I was selected to run. It was my breakthrough assignment. I was a young plant manager, and Goodyear was I was promoted to be the assistant plant manager, but it was in the deep south of Texas. And so they didn't have any African Americans or minorities on their leadership team. I was tasked to go down to the plant, and it was really around, in the person's word, Billy is one that won't back away from accountability or confrontation. He doesn't like it, but he never shies away from it. Okay. And so as I arrive, I'm looking at this team that's failing, and I'm scared to death. They don't even know I'm coming. Matter of fact, the team finds out I'm coming the day I arrive, and I'm told to stay in the hotel room until they announce it. And so once they announce it, the car picks me up, takes me to the plant. But here's where it got really tricky. On day three, the plant manager was removed, and I was there by myself because I was coming in to be the assistant plant manager of a failing organization. And so now I'm in front of this team that I assume may have some issues with me being the leader, the top person. And we're struggling, and we're in desperate need of some strategic direction. And when I got him in the room, the first thing I said was, I need your help. I need your help putting in the plan. Here's what I see are some of the issues. But before I even share my feedback with you, I want to play catch ball. And I'm going to put four, post-it, major big post-its on the wall. And let's go around the room. Each one of you tell us what our strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, and threats. And then I'll be the last one to tell you what I think as an outside eye. And then I said, so what's our purpose? Why are we even here? Now, what I was doing is actually building a strategy on a page. And when we got done, I said, so here's what you said is our current state, and here's where we want to go. Is that right? And more importantly, I had the union president in the room at the same time. And I think about it. Yeah, the union president was in the room, and it was like he says, of my 20 plus years, no one's ever asked me. Now, what I was thinking was when I sit in front of these 1500 people, he can't go against the strategy. It's our strategy. That plant in 6 months had a complete turnaround. Right. Because they felt it was their strategy. They didn't think it was Billy Taylor's strategy. And they felt I did it with them, not to them. Right? It was those things that when we have a voice, as human beings, we crave being valued more than anything else. We say we want money. We say we want the luxuries of life. What we really crave is to be valued. Right? And just try it. When you go to next time you check into a hotel, look at the badge of the person at the counter and call them by their name. And when you come back, mention their name again. It'll blow you away. Just the value proposition that we feel that people value what we bring to the table. That's at every level of the organization. And also, I don't care how famous you are, it's still applicable. I don't care if you're Beyonce or Taylor Swift or Travis Kelce. It doesn't matter. You want to feel valued. And when you feel valued, I'm going to give you my very best if I think you value me. I'm going to give you my very best. But if I don't think you value me, I'm going to give you just enough.
Yeah.
No more, no less. And so that's why that inclusiveness is at the heart of change, right? Diversity is what drives change. Inclusion is how you drive that change, right? And because I've led diversity and inclusion, it's not about race, gender. Most people go right there, and they stay right there, and they make it a bad word. They make it confrontational. It's about being accepted and being allowed to be your authentic self, bringing your best you to the table, hearing your best you, your voice. And when you do that, change happens.
Yeah. I want to talk a little bit more about start where you are, but also how you can stretch from where you are to where you want to be. So you went down to Texas as the assistant plant manager, and 3 days later, you're the full manager. I assume that was a little bit of growing that you had to do. How can leaders or frontline workers, whoever's listening to this, understand their current capabilities, but stretch themselves, take on more to get to where they want to be next?
Mm-hmm. I think it starts with asking, being self-aware of where you are. I knew I wasn't ready to be a full-fledged plant manager. I had gaps. I didn't know how to conduct the meetings for executive staff. And I'm barely 30 years old at that time. I remember calling a guy by the name of Jim Davis, who was a veteran plant manager. And I said, here's where I am. Here's where I need to be. What do I need to do? And will you coach me? And when I got to a certain point, I started again where I was. So start where you are doesn't mean stay where you started. Okay, it's you continue to move, right? The benchmark, the starting point. You move the starting point, right? Let's go back to the marathon. I start with walking a mile. And now my new starting point was now I get to where I can run a mile. Now my new starting point where I can run 4 miles. So my starting point continues to move so that I know if I'm going backwards or forward. I have those benchmarks. And so as a leader, you have to continue to invest in yourself and seek out. My mentors today are my children and some millennials. They're coaching me. They're coaching me how to interact with the new workforce. Mm. Because you think about starting where you are, today's workforce, the companies I work with, they said, we don't have enough people. And I remember having a discussion with the CEO and saying, you don't have a hiring problem. You have a retention problem. You've hired 3 workforces. You have 600 people. You've hired 1,800 people. They don't stay. Let's look around why they don't stay, because that's the problem of today's workforce. But my kids... I'm a part of some conferences, and one of my sons went to a recent conference, and he says, Dad, everything I hear about this conference is on LinkedIn. He said, there's a whole new world out there for my generation. And I see nothing on those platforms. Nothing at all. And the days, Dad, of the 30 minute kind of video, a podcast, he says, Dad, if you're going to do a podcast, can I give you some advice? I'm like, sure. He said, record 50 minutes and then cut that podcast into 3-minute segments. You're going to post the same podcast in its entirety, but then the key points, you're going to break out in 3-minute videos so that people can get their doses between meetings, and he was right. And he says, Dad, you get double views. And then put the shorts, put these little shorts on TikTok. What he was doing was mentoring me around how to improve. Don't get stuck in your old ways, Dad. What worked for you then, there's a new platform, new way of doing it.
Yep, you're probably going to have to hire his son. I don't think I'm going to be capable of editing this into 3-minute shock and posting on TikTok.
We may have to. Get a TikTok account. I don't even have one.
Yeah, we're gonna need somebody from the Gen Z to join.
but I'm laughing. I'm listening to the way we're all interacting, and I have my screen set up as though we're in the audience. Okay. It's engaging just watching us four.
Sure.
If you look at it from that perspective, and if those were snippets, the questions you were asking me, if they were headlines, That's continuous improvement. That's the same thing we're talking about, starting where you are.
Gotcha. Billy, you also said something that I'd like to ask you about, and it sometimes with leaders, it's not a real popular topic or discussion, and that's vulnerability. A lot of us and leaders grew up in that command and control environment, and where if you did show any vulnerability, that was a sign of weakness. But talk to us a little bit about that, the importance of admitting that you don't have all the answers as a leader.
Yeah, that's important because it's a sign of humanity. It's right. We migrate to those leaders, especially today, that have that trait. Because no one knows everything. No one knows everything. And I think that when leaders can hold or are consistent to a standard, then you can show that vulnerability. You can be vulnerable because you're consistent. And we talked about Nick Saban. I'm not an Alabama fan, but I am a Nick Saban fan because he is vulnerable at times. And I remember he was dealing with a female reporter and he was very sarcastic or whatever. He came on national TV and apologized and actually did a special with that lady. Now, what do I remember most? Him and the lady doing the after podcast, not him being sarcastic. Because that happens, right? And so leaders that are vulnerable, right, are the leaders that enter the hearts and minds of the people they lead. And they stay there. They stay there, right? Because good leaders, I saw the question, a young man asked a question recently, would you rather be feared or trusted? Or respected, I think. Feared or respected. And first he said, feared. Then he says, no, respected. He says, when they fear it, they're only going to follow what I ask them to do while I'm in the room. When I'm respected, I'm with them 24 hours a day.
Wow, Billy, this has been really, really good. I was thinking about the story because I am a big Alabama football fan. I'm a big Nick Saban fan. I remember that sideline outburst of his with that reporter. And to put a little more context into that, he was trying to protect his quarterback at that time, Jalen, that's absolutely now become an NFL superstar. And even though his intentions were good, his results were not good. So good intentions don't equal good results. Mm-hmm. And he had to eat some crow and provide some humility and come back on later, like you had said, and publicly apologize to her. So I thought that was really good because he could have easily justified his actions with, well, I'm trying to do this. Irregardless of his reason, he still had to say he had to hold himself accountable a different standard, right. And well, Billy, I cannot tell you how much I enjoy talking to you, whether it's walking through the streets of Dallas like we did a couple years ago, or whether it's on a podcast. You inspire me. You encourage me. I'm just so appreciative of your leadership on so many different platforms that you're involved in. So, Billy, just on behalf of Baptist Memorial Healthcare, just thank you so much for spending time. And I hope that you'll come back again. I know this is the second time, but I could talk to you for a long time. But you wouldn't be able to run your business if I did that. So thank you so much, Billy, on behalf of Baptist, for spending time with us today and being a part of Connecting the Dots podcast.
Thank you all. Vote. I've had a great time and it was outstanding talking to you. So thanks for having me, and I'll come back anytime. Thank you.
Thank you. Billy.